Wonderful. Thank you, Bradfords. Good morning. Welcome to the West Valley Center for Spiritual Living. I'm Reverend Karen Rice, and I am the spiritual leader of this community, and I'm really happy to be here today. I'm very excited about the message. So who is that in the booth? Dana? Okay, if I get loud, try to manage me from back there, because I have something I'm really excited to talk about today. So, look at us here. It is, happy Thanksgiving. It is Thanksgiving this week. I don't know how that happened, except it does every year. And, I do not have that piece of paper you gave me, Miss Kathy. So I'm going to need you to guide me a little bit, I think. I left all that somewhere, I don't know. There was this real mass crazy moment when I came out the door and realized I had not mic'd myself yet. So then everything went a little sideways. But look, we did it. So we're making a little change in the service. The paper I'm joking with Kathy about is that we're going to try and do some music during the offering. Kathy and I have been talking about this for 6 or 8 months, I think, and I keep dragging it out. And last time she was here, she said to me, let's just do it the next time I'm here. We'll just experiment and see how it goes. So we've changed up a few things, and between what I remember and what Kathy knows, we're going to guide you through it. It should be really easy. So we're going to sing Blessed Always. Thank you.
I am so blessed.
during the offering, and it'll be easy to learn. It's got a lot of repetition. We're going to do a short version of it. And then we'll still do Blessed Always, like we have been doing. And then after I do the closing benediction, they're going to give us one rip-roaring exit song that I have asked for especially. So you'll get to enjoy that surprise when we get to that part of the service. So, if it looks clunky, it's because new things do sometimes look clunky. And change is a good thing. And the title of the message today is Blessings Counted, Multiply, and the theme for the Sunday experience is about expansion. So with all this great, I'm calling it wisdom from under the big top, I know, isn't it fun? We've just had such a good time, and I love the prizes and the games. The magnets are fabulous. Every week just seems to get better and better, and I'm a little worried about the idea that there might be a bigger balloon than that one, but we'll see what happens. We'll see if we can roll with it, because we only have 1 week left in the stewardship campaign. So it's Thanksgiving, and I really do believe that gratitude, a practice of gratitude, is one of the most important principles we teach in terms of manifestation. So this idea of being grateful for what we have, you start at the beginning, and what's really rich and empowering about it is that this is the tool we can all call on when life looks especially scary, or you've got a big decision in your life, and it's a way we can get right back centered into spirit by letting go of whatever that is that concerns us for just a moment and looking for something in our life to give thanks for. Because no matter what's going on in your life, there is always something to be grateful for. Some days it's the fingers on your hand. Sometimes it's really a marvelous treat to appreciate what we can do with our hands and our fingers, right? So there's always something to be grateful for, no matter how difficult our conditions or situation may seem. And we get there, we return to truth by having that sense of appreciation. And I would draw your attention to the fact that to appreciate something is to assign value to it. And if you look at the financial, that's interesting. No. I don't know. It'd be distracting. It's the elephant. What does that mean? So all the blind people touching the elephant finally did him in. Yeah, Rod, you might be able to reach it, actually, because it just slides in. And if the whole thing falls, we're just going to let it go till afterwards, because we have some photography going on later. So we are going to want it in place after the service. There's this way in which we look at appreciation. And in fact, in financial terms, we want things to appreciate the value on your home, right? If we talk about appreciation from a financial perspective, it is about increase. And so in spiritual practice, we always emphasize this, there's an urgency almost in starting, before you look at your needs and your wants, we call you to be grateful for what you have. And that's what we've been doing here for this month in the stewardship program, building a wall in Papke Hall. We've been building this wall, and we made the foundation gratitude statements. I asked everyone for the past 2 weeks to write down on a block, a sticky block, something that you're grateful for pertaining to our spiritual community. And it's made a gorgeous wall. I was in here, I rearranged it a little bit for the family meeting. So I was here yesterday having fun in there. And that's now the strong foundation. So we start with what we're grateful for, and then that changes the energy. Sometimes we talk about gratitude from a spiritual perspective as the anointing of increase. Isn't that a lovely way to look at it? So during this month of looking at what it means to be good stewards for our center, we are really looking for our future, and we start by valuing our present. We put value in those who came before us, and then we value what we have right now. And that is a great place to move forward from. And I think that this whole way that even all of CSL, our parent organization, all of our centers, as we're following this theme of values-based spiritual living, we can see that there's something gorgeous in the way they have chosen the month of November to be the month in which we focus the value of financial well-being. We express order and balance in our financial well-being through the richness of our teaching and applying it, its application. We value the principle of abundance. And through this, we have a means to provide resources to empower our personal and collective vision. Wow, is that a gorgeous affirmation. And all the centers are chatting that one up all around the globe. More than 100 of our centers have jumped on and are sharing this same message. So as we appreciate the richness of this, we see, and this is why I'm excited about the message today, that the future of our teaching, SOM, that was so cute. Where did Joyce go? That was so perfect, Joyce, that you got all the way there and then went, I can't even remember what it stands for, because it doesn't matter. You know, it really doesn't matter. But the science of mind is what Ernest Holmes, the founder, called, he called the teaching. So as we look this week at this idea of expansion, I kept thinking of what a luscious word expansion is for us to begin to understand. It is a natural quality of life, of all of life. And in fact, the way that we can look at nature and use the laws of nature to better understand spiritual principle, because we can see the laws of nature, the laws of spirituality we experience the effect of, but we can come to understand how the laws work best by examining what happens in nature. And so if you notice that we can plant seeds to grow flowers or vegetables, whatever it is we desire to grow, or we can see in nature when the wind blows, the seeds move around, and there are all kinds of wildlife that volunteers to grow wherever the wind has blown it or the birds have deposited the seeds. And so the seed turns into a plant, And eventually, all plants have to bud in somewhere or create pods or something. Some plants will blossom, actually bloom, and then as they age, that bloom gets fuller and more luscious until it appears to be going through the opposite of life, and that is death. But it's never a death, because what happens is as that fullness of the bloom now begins to fade away, the seed is blown out, and there's this gorgeous way life regenerates itself. And it is an ongoing experience of expansion and development I love the way certain plants, even wildlife plants in the desert, will just reach out and spread and expand and grow and really be even prolific in certain times of the year. And we see the continuity of life even in the harsh desert. So there's something here in a lesson about the continuity of life, the ongoing process of life, the cycle of life itself. So we're having such a good time with the Emmett Fox booklet. And I understand there were a few more. We found a few more if you didn't get yours yet. And they're in the bookstore right now. We're studying on Mondays, either at 10:30 in the morning here or 6 o'clock in the evening, also here. We have these study groups going where we will be looking at the third chapter in this little booklet named Mental Equivalent. I don't think I could have found a better little book for us to study, because every week it is just spot on with us understanding how this works from a slightly different perspective, because it's Emmett Fox who is pretty popular in New Thought, in 12-step, and just yet another metaphysical author for us in religious science. We value all of them. And in chapter 3 that we'll be looking at tomorrow, the title of chapter 3 is so great, Building a New Mental Equivalent. Now, when I take that idea of building, it immediately, as I just got so excited when I saw that was the title of the chapter, because to talk about building something implies some action. And it also implies that there was something that preceded that. You know, there had to be a plan or a goal. And even before the plan or the goal, it had to be an idea. So let's say we wanted to talk about that somebody decides they want to build some new condominiums in West Phoenix. And so there was an idea somewhere. Somebody was thinking about it. Oh, that would be a good business venture. And I have an idea of what it would look like. And that person maybe sits with a team of other people and they talk about some of the details. And then they hire an architect and they sit with an architect and they describe what they have. And then the architect throws in his or her ideas of how that would work or what might be better. And now the idea starts coming into form. They make a plan. And the architect sets out to create the plans for the project at the same time as maybe the CFO is looking at how to get funding for the project, at the same time as another player on the team is out looking at available property, and eventually it all comes together and voila, this new project arises. Everywhere you look. And, you know, I have only been in Phoenix for 6 years or so. But for those of you who have been here a long time, I know this whole place, the whole Phoenix Valley, has changed radically in the last 20 years or so. So everything you see that you look at, this building included, was just an idea first. Now, all of the fun things that we created for the stewardship month, all the games and the decorations and the balloons, all of that came because a committee of people agreed to sit together and we visioned. That's where you have a meditation process where you call on God's highest idea for whatever the project is. And there are several questions we ask. And then we pulled all of our notes. Was it the elephant again? Okay. He's scaring me a little bit, but you know why? It's probably the air, because the air is blowing it now. We visioned, and then we looked at all the things that came up in the visioning, and we looked for themes. What are the themes that came from all of that? And then we put our minds together, and we all each had an opportunity to say, you know what I see? I see this, and I see that. And then we took all of those words, and we saw that we had fun. We had games. We had playfulness. And voila, it just then started taking form. So the vision of it, as we began to get an idea and it began to create, we could see the images of what was possible in our minds, that then fires up a creative energy around it and it brings an aliveness to the project. And that's what the mental equivalent is all about. It's about the way we begin to not focus on what we don't want in our own personal lives, let's say, but we begin to really plant an image, an idea of what else might be possible. But first, you have to believe that something else is possible. And right? I mean, this is really important. This is like a huge aha for me when I was writing this material. It's like we always teach how to do this, and we talk about the law of attraction and mental equivalence and the law of correspondence, and we have all these amazing tools, and that's why you take classes and why we have testimonials and why our lives change when we begin to study this stuff and to apply it. I mean, you could study it till the cows come home, but well, I don't know if the cows coming home would make any difference. You've got to plant the image in your mind. And then, you know, and so in a way, I think to say to plant the image in your mind is to say that you're convincing yourself that the good you desire is indeed possible. So again, it's not just the thing, but it's the experience. Now, Emmett Fox speaks about this in this week's material. And by the way, in chapter 3, you get halfway through and it looks like it's done, but it's not. So turn a page when you think you're done and go on, because there's some really good stuff after that too. Here's what he says in this chapter. As within, so without. Note carefully that in the Bible, the word within always means thought, and the word without means manifestation or experience. That is why Jesus said that the kingdom of heaven, which the kingdom of heaven is health, harmony, and freedom, that is why Jesus said that is within. Harmonious thought means harmonious experience. Okay, beautiful statement, beautiful quote there. I'm going to stretch that out a minute. That is why vibrant thoughts lead to vibrant experiences. That is why thoughts of abundance, we're working on the prosperity consciousness of this community all month. That is why those thoughts, those ideas that we're planting this month, will lead to an experience of overflow and of plenty and of increase. Because we begin to imagine not how are we going to pay the bills next year, we begin to imagine how wonderful it is, what it feels like to have enough and more, to have an overflow, and to be absolutely confident that we know who our source is. That there is that, right? Let's just hear one big amen. You know, we want to get a little bit revved up about this because this is so, so valuable. Now, often in our life, we don't think about it that way. We think about it in the opposite way. We notice when there's not enough. And then what we're thinking about is lack and limitation. So I want to add today something I don't know that I've ever said before, but I think that it's so important for us to begin to practice consciously using the tools that we teach, specifically spiritual mind treatment, where we are praying in a very specific way that affirms that good that we desire. It is the way you hear the practitioners pray. It is the voice in which I pray during the healing prayer as soon as the message is done. And to see that what we're doing by affirming all the things we say in the prayer is we are building a personal conviction so that we can convince ourselves that we really do believe that's possible. That's it. That's really it. That's the whole thing. Yeah, I should just be done now, but I'm not. That is the whole thing. And so what happens is it will look like you're praying for your health to get better, or you're praying for a new job, whatever that good is that you desire in your life. But what is really happening, I think, this is an added piece that that just came to me. I think what we're doing is we're keeping ourselves clear so that we can halt, we can stop and prevent any limited thinking or any negativity. So that, am I too loud? God, I'm feeling really kind of excited now. So that we can be stopping all of that, shifting in a new direction, opening ourselves to be ready to receive. And in that way, we are creating a different experience. And guess what happens then? Our life changes. That's right. Dorothy, you win the prize. That is exactly what happens. So, you know, it's as simple as the way Jesus would ask people when they would come to him for a healing, and he would say, yeah, but do you believe it's possible? Do you have the faith? And then we get that great, great message that it is done unto us as we believe. And let me just add one more thing. Even very wealthy people can suffer from ideas of lack and limitation. So do not be fooled into thinking what looks like a strong prosperity consciousness. Again, we're looking at stuff. The prosperity consciousness is in our ability to, when you have, to then not worry about whether or not you're going to lose it, so that we're not walking through life waiting for the other shoe to drop or be stolen out from under us, as happened before the service. Whoops, my bad. I took one of her boots because I really liked them. I gave it back, though. They're still pretty. So this is beginning science of mind. This is really the very beginning of what we teach in this philosophy. And I get excited about stuff like this because it seems very clear to me that we have never needed this teaching in the history of humanity. We have never needed this teaching as much as we do now. And so what I know is, and I chat about this from time to time because I desire for us to really embody this truth, that what we have and what we do here in classwork and what we talk about every Sunday morning is relevant. It is more relevant than anything Ernest Holmes imagined 100 years ago when he was throwing this all together. In fact, next year in 2018, we will be celebrating our 100th anniversary of this philosophy being a teaching that reaches out to all kinds of people. Our founder, Ernest Holmes, was not about proselytizing, and neither am I. He would always put proselytize. We are not a proselytizing or evangelizing order, religious order. We are an educational organization. And so I think it is valuable for us to consider getting back to the basics of that importance, the value of the education that we offer all the time. And the natural laws of expansion, think about this, in nature, if you watch the way things expand in nature, what we see is that in order for anything to be healthy, in order for any life to thrive, there has to be that element of constant growth and movement. And so the same has to be true for us as human beings. We have been given this gift of life in this container that we probably do not cherish as much as we should until we get sick. Notice then you really know. Then you value health, right? That's the way that one always goes. So we want to count those blessings and understand this principle of expansion. And for us as human beings, what that means is in order to stay expansive and active in life, especially those of us who are, beyond midlife, mature midlife, I would say that what we know is we have to stay active. You know, if you sit still for too long, then it's a bigger effort to get up and move. If you exercise your brain, it keeps you sharp and it helps your memory. So it's just natural and logical that in order to thrive and to be as healthy as we can be, we are invited to remain interested in life. That is a really lovely way to say it. I think it's one of the bonuses of Sun City living. We seriously moved here and thought that was, no, we don't want to live in Sun City. Everybody's old in Sun City. And then we were certainly eligible. But but then I wasn't here very long when Judy Baker took me on a tour of Sun City Grand, and my jaw dropped and I went, oh, I really get it. People come here to live. People retire here because there is so much to do, and it makes me laugh that all of my retired friends barely have time to meet me for lunch and stuff because they're so busy with their schedules. And I think that's a good thing. We don't want to lose our oomph. And that kind of active living is good for us. So we count our blessings to create a healthy foundation, and we know that then our life expands from there. That's what supports us in a very stable and secure way. So let me tell you that the way I see us moving into 2018 is to align ourselves as a spiritual community. My desire is that, and my vision calling me every single day. I dive in a little deeper, and it's very exciting. To really go back to that basic root of what does it mean to be an educational organization. I think of that beautiful T.S. Eliot quote that says that we eventually we return to the place where we once began and we know it for the first time. So our teaching was built on this idea. This is what charged me. This is what drew me in when I first became attracted to religious science. We're built on this idea that every great religion and spiritual tradition at its very core is based on truth. So rather than compare ourselves and look at differences, we as an organization choose to consciously honor all paths to God, all the spiritual paths, and to be a part of being inclusive and supportive, and to know that we don't need to have the only one way, the true way, the best way. We just honor all paths, and then we feed ourselves in the way that we know we are best nurtured and nourished. You know, I just notice that if I have something green for dinner and crunchy, that I feel different than when I just have too much pizza, even though I love too much pizza. But I just notice I feel better, right? And so that's what we're talking about. How do we nurture ourselves, spiritually speaking, and make the right choices for that? So all religion, Ernest Holmes was so wonderful to spend time looking at this and writing about this. All religion exists because people are trying to make sense out of their life and the world and the what's going on in the heavens, you know? And so religion was born. Christianity was born from the teachings of a Jewish rabbi. Jesus was never a Christian. Christianity happened much later, after he was no longer on the planet, where he came and he had this brilliant intuitive knowing that the Jewish faith had become so weighted down by the legalistic or the rules and the doctrine and all of that. And he came and he tried to simplify it. And he said, let's just, you know, it's almost like going back to the Ten Commandments. Let's just love one another. Let's practice compassion. Let's believe in goodness and kindness. Let's practice love and forgiveness. And so his message was very, very basic. But I want to say to you that I believe the most important thing that the great teacher Jesus brought us was an idea of oneness. The Father and I are one. It was a huge, unusual idea for that time and that location and what was going on in the world. Jesus said that that whole idea of the oneness with God, the indwelling presence. He preached about the direct experience of God or the immediacy of God, and this was so important because what he was saying is it's not about a far off entity that's judging and that we have to please. He was inviting us to see and to have and to experience an intimacy with a different aspect of God. So the followers, of course, took it and made a religion out of it, and then you know it just grew. And it grew and it grew. I just looked this up on the internet over the weekend. Currently, and this is an approximate value, there are about 33,000 Christian denominations on this planet. 33,000 Christian denominations. And the funny part for me is this was not on the internet. This is truly my opinion. You must forgive me as soon as the words come out of my mouth. Pretty much most of them, I'll say most of them, believe they have the only true faith, the only true version of how that is to be done, even though they're all purporting to worship Jesus. They all worship in different ways, but they all have an idea that there is just a single way and that they somehow have found it. So that when I thought of that, I remembered reading this a couple of weeks ago. It's a book by Neil Donald Walsh called The New Revelations, and he shared an article that was actually published in the Phoenix, what is it, what's our paper? Somebody help me, I can't see it. Arizona Republic. It was actually published in the Arizona Republic in 2011 or early 2012, perhaps. It was also published in the LA Times, but after 9/11, A large group of politicians and celebrities and religious leaders got together and said, we have to do something to begin the healing for this country. We have to create a place where people who are so raw and frightened, you know, where we can come together and do something sort of ecumenical. So they put out invitations to different religious leaders and celebrities, and just to try and get as many big names as they could involved, and they actually met in Yankee Stadium. And one of the ministers who was invited to do the benediction at this event, Reverend David Benke, who is a Missouri Synod Lutheran minister, he did. He showed up, and he and Reverend David did a beautiful benediction at the event. And a while later, he was summoned to the whatever the central offices are, or the big people who have opinions, that the leadership over the ministers in the field, and they actually, six of them, got together and signed a petition. For Benke's expulsion from the church because he had participated in idolatry and he had committed syncretism. I had to look that up. Do you know what syncretism is? He was accused of promoting a view that all religions are equal. So the conclusion of the article said that the church leaders of from that faith hold that they must not pray in public with anyone from another faith. So what I want to say about that is, and that was a long time ago, I suspect that all of that is changing now because the world is changing, the country is changing. And what's happening, and I've mentioned it here before, is that people are not coming to church like they used to. And that's a broad-based statement. It's true for every faith, with the exception of the big megachurches, perhaps. But what we see are this dwindling, that the services are getting smaller and churches are having to close their doors. But the reason that's happening is because of the old exclusive ideas from some of those organizations that really have in their doctrine that they have the only true faith. Now, what I love about what we do here is that we aim to be as inclusive as possible. And I don't think all ministers would word it that way. I think some would say we are inclusive, but what I notice is I have my own biases, so I sometimes don't realize I'm not being as inclusive as I think I am. But we are not alone, that there's all this excitement going on in all other directions. Rob Bell, who is also a Christian minister and had his own wake-up call, said this, "Something new is emerging. We are at the end of one era and the start of another. An entire mode of understanding and talking about God is dying, and something new is being born." Neil Donald Walsh has a similar message. He's been talking about tomorrow's God. And he states this, "It's not a new God, it's a new understanding and an expanded concept. And most important, it is a deeper awareness and experience of God." Oh my gosh, may I just tell you, you know, I mean, we've had Bishop Spong and Bishop Carlton Pearson and all these edgy people who are waking up and saying, wait a minute, Christian ministers who are waking up and well-known and popular, and they're saying, I'm not sure I believe in hell anymore. I'm thinking we put too much emphasis on this idea of an opposing force to God, Satan the devil, and they're writing and the bookshelves are filled with, there's new material every day, and I just can't tell you how touched I am, because for once, I'm feeling like I'm not the only one. I am not the only, you go ahead and laugh at me, but it does feel like an island. You know this because when you try and talk to other people, sometimes they just think we're in a cult and we're silly. We don't know better. So I am, as part of our educational shift that Mark was talking about that I will elaborate on in the family meeting, I am looking at us as having a relevant spirituality, because the times we're living in require an expanded concept. We need a new language. We need new ways to listen to each other and not judge each other when it comes to different ideas, whether it's religion or politics or your HOA. I just think all of it, by the way, you know how I always complain about the HOA? I always throw that in a Sunday talk. Hugh was in the hospital. It was 8:30 at night, and I'm home alone. There was a knock at the door, and I thought it was my daughter coming to help me change a light bulb, because, you know, it takes apparently three people in my house to change a freaking light bulb. But I open the door, and it's not my daughter. It's a man, and he's holding a bag, and he is the president of the HOA, and I won the prize because I voted for this. And he gave me this big bag overflowing with light bulbs. So I think I probably have to not bash the HOAs anymore. But you all know what I'm talking about. You have the sentiment right there with me. So here's the deal, and I really sort of shouted this out last week. We must, every one of us, I don't care how evolved you are, how enlightened you've become, how long you've been on this path, we are all invited to have a larger idea of what God is and how Spirit works and shows up in our life. It is expansion that we are talking about, and it is the only way we can thrive. We must continue growing, and in that way, we will begin to see each other through different eyes, I guarantee that. This matters so much to me. I have a favorite quote that I paraphrase from Antoine de Saint-Exupéry, the person that wrote The Little Prince. And he said something like this: if you want to build a boat, don't teach people to gather wood. Teach them to long for the sea. And so all the work I do in this pulpit as a minister in this community and in Phoenix and in my own personal life, everything I do is not about trying to convert people to think like we do. I know this is a beautiful philosophy and it works, but it is not about conversion. It is not about trying to grow our faith to be one of the mega faiths of the century. It is none of that. What I long for, and the reason I do desire to fill every seat in this sanctuary, is because I want you to feed something within you that will give you that experience of Spirit. I long for you to have that call to goodness and to kindness and to that understanding that there can be more, that there can always be a greater experience, a more intimate closeness with the divine. We can equip people here with practical skills that can be applied in our lives. This teaching works. It is relevant, transformational, and it makes sense. For me, it soothes my soul when the world frightens me, or when my husband gets sick and I'm concerned. It is that which I can stand in at any given moment and just feel, as I remember, feel the way I am completely supported by a God that loves me, sustains me, and is constantly pouring the grace, the pure divine grace, into my life. So I think the question is this, and I entertain this question on a regular basis. Is there a way to grow a church and thrive and remain vibrant and alive in a time when most churches are not doing that? And what I know is that I profoundly believe there is. And I, by stating this out loud, am desiring to plant seeds in you, that we can share this planting of creating seeds for a mental equivalent that will indeed fill up this sanctuary and transform lives and lighten hearts and soothe us when things are bumpy. We are setting today a mental equivalent, and so I have homework for you if you like to write things down. This is the time to do it. I would love it if everybody here and everybody that listens to the recording of this message from this time forward would take some time to read page 489 in the Science of Mind textbook. You don't have to go out and buy it if you don't have it. I keep one on the table out here in the bookstore that you could browse through. I want you to read the section on page 489 called Mental Expansion. These are the words of Ernest Holmes on this topic that we just discussed. And then I want you to notice that he has referred you to a scriptural passage in 2 Corinthians, the third chapter. And I especially, he says 3:18, and I'm going to say, I want you to read and study and contemplate and wonder and question the verses 9 through 18, and then I'd love to have some conversations with you about it. And if that's not enough, I want you to get on the internet. If you don't have a Eugene Peterson version of the paraphrased Bible called The Message, I want you to get on the internet and find those passages and read his words and see if it doesn't touch something within you that causes you to long for the sea. Let's count our blessings. Let's expand and grow and increase and extend. Let us have in our consciousness the divine ideal for the perfect expression of life as we live it. And let us remain vibrant and excited about life. Let us have that joyous anticipation of all that's possible. And at this time, I would like to call forward all the practitioners that are here in the room. And just to hold the space while we anchor these ideas in the words of prayer. So take a nice deep breath. Just let the stillness and the music just wash over you for a moment. Oh, and we shift our minds from listening in that intellectual way as we position ourselves to be open vessels, to just receive right now. I feel the love of God within me. And I recognize that love that we can sense and know and feel, it is the activity of life within us. I know there is a power and a presence in this universe. It is greater than we are. It is a power for good, and it is right here, right now. It is in this sanctuary. It permeates every molecule in the walls and the chairs that support us. And it is at the very core of our being. It is the infinite intelligence of the human body that holds that divine DNA. It is the wisdom of the physical body that knows how to heal what ails us. It is that beautiful imagining factor of the mind that stimulates us to lofty thoughts. I feel the love of God, and I know that we are unified with this powerful expression, God within us. We live and move and have our being in pure spirit. And so from this place of oneness, of deep connection, of standing in absolute truth, we simply recognize that there is a force for good that is on our side, that there is that which does sustain us in all ways, that we have always this magnificent source of good, and that it can in no way be missing or limited in any way whatsoever. So right here, right in our lives, right in the circumstances we walk through, and in the lives of our loved ones, there is this presence of love, of infinite intelligence, of truth, of beauty, of perfect order. And so feeling that perfect alignment, we move again, the movement of the breath, the beating of the heart, it moves in that perfect rhythm, in that perfection of life, demonstrating to us in every moment all that is possible. And so standing in that place, feeling the physical body being rejuvenated, opening ourselves to be vessels to receive more, we become conduits of grace and of goodness, of health and of well-being in every way. And so wherever there is appearance of less than perfection, we simply allow ourselves to hunker down, to anchor in, and to know that right here is God. And so I say thank you, God. Thank you, life. Thank you, infinite spirit. We stand in this gratitude, this appreciation, knowing that blessings counted multiply. It is the nature of divine life. And so from that place of deep, heartfelt gratitude, I simply release. I release the words of this prayer. I allow them to be. And together we say, and so it is. Amen.